The tide is coming in, and he needs to move on. But while walking on a muddy, rocky landscape, he slips and falls almost directly into one of the pools. He realizes the burden of the habits he retained after leaving his collapsing home. The number of his limbs prove highly inadequate, if not entirely incompatible with this kind of environment. The rules of gravity seem to behave differently here. His elbows are bleeding. His right palm has a few deep cuts. In them, mud, sand, and seawater mix with blood and sweat. Without being fully aware, he's just entered into a blood oath with the intertidal zone.
In many coastal places around the world, lives of not only fishermen and their families, but also entire communities were and still are organized in accordance with tidal cycles, not the mechanical clock. Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people, who have lived the longest along the shorelines of today's British Columbia, and on whose unceded territory and their soundscapes we are now walking, have coexisted with tides for many centuries. When the tide is out, the table is set. This old indigenous proverb expresses a deep significance of tides to their communities, but it also reflects a difference from the attitude of settlers, who would often treat the same tides as forces to be fought, organized, and capitalized on, in order to facilitate progress and expansion of their interests. For the native communities, tides have been caregivers, generous providers of gifts and food. They would selectively harvest it as to ensure the sustenance and diversity of species. For the colonizers, the same tides were often enemies, working against their will and thus calling to be restrained.
He starts waking up in the middle of the night with no reason, almost always around the same time. He suspects that his restlessness has some correspondence with the tides. He recalls hearing of the deaths of wounded soldiers, strangely coinciding with low tides, as if their spirits were draining out with the ocean. The increasing tides would extend their lives for at least another cycle. His skin persistently smells like the sulfur compound you find in algae, which gives coastal areas their specific smell. He waits until the tide backs off and continues to the slack water. He now keeps returning here, unconsciously falling into a rhythm. Typically, when stepping into this zone, the battery of his watch depletes. It must get affected by the magnetic charge trapped in some iron ore or volcanic rocks deliberately planted by the tides, as if trying to release him from confinement in mechanical time. He collects sand to construct an hourglass, one that follows the tides, while interfering with the rhythm of his electronic devices.
Instead of landscapes, it feels more proper to speak of coastal areas as timescapes. Proposed by a sociologist, Barbara Adams, this term suggests that human impact on the environment is often imperceptible because it happens over a long period of time, slowly affecting temporalities of other species. Thinking in terms of timescapes helps better perceive how human-imposed rhythms imprint themselves on environments, how they contaminate various temporal dimensions of space, normally inaccessible to us. In a similar way, Henri Lefebvre, an urban philosopher, described our lived environments as constellations of rhythms. He distinguished two main types specifically, cyclical and linear. The cyclical originates in the cosmic, in nature, days, nights, Seasons, the waves and tides of the sea, monthly cycles. Great cyclical rhythms last for a period and then restart. Dawn, always new, often suburb, inaugurates the return of the everyday. The linear, by contrast, defines itself through the reproduction of the same, almost identical phenomenon over time, with the same intervals in between. The linear originates from human activities and gestures of mechanized labor. But these kinds of repetitions never restart themselves. Instead, they are oriented towards constant progress and expansion that often violates cyclical rhythms. While walking along the seawall, about which I now feel different, even anxious, I notice other intertidal figures. Among them is a collector of driftwood. I see her navigating between several massive logs. Those logs are escapees from barges, rafts, or booms, special bordering structures made by logging companies to keep the harvested trees intact after their long journey down the river. In those booms, the logs await the last stretch of their transportation route towards lumber mills. Often a combination of stormy weather and high tide that ushers logs to break out of their confines. The tides gradually deliver some of them to the shores and randomly scatter them around. Others wind up far out in the ocean, over time congregating into floating ecosystems of temporary habitats, rich in diverse species. As many as 100 types of invertebrates and more than 100 species of fish use driftwood as their grounds, a temporary place for regeneration. On those logs that end up on beaches, birds may perch, helping fertilize wetlands and marshes. Seeds that get trapped in them will get a chance to turn into new shoots, transforming the logs into nursing sites for new lives to come.